House will come to order. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today is February the 4th, 2015. It's the 17th day of the session. Pending deadlines. Friday, this coming Friday, February 6th, is the last day for bills to be reported out of committee in the House of Origin. And Monday, next Monday, February 9th, last day for Committee of the Whole in the House of Origin. If your bill is not debated and passed out of Committee of the Whole by the time that we adjourn on Monday, it's gone. So anything we can do to help each other move these bills along. And incidentally, sometimes there might be something in a bill that you find troubling. I've been guilty of this myself. You find troubling, you want to get up and talk about it. You might consider, instead of taking time in the Committee of the Whole to talk about it, let the bill go through in Committee of the Whole and get a second reading amendment drafted. We'll deal with it on second reading and get through Committee of the Whole on all our bills. Clerk will call the roll.
Allen. Here. Baker. Baker. Baldwin. Here. Barlow. Here. Berger. Here. Blackburn. Blackburn. Blake. Here. Burkhart. Here. Bird. Campbell, here. Kennedy, here. Clem, here. Connolly, here. Dayton, here. Edmonds, here. Edwards, Edwards, here. Eklund, here. Esquivel, here. Esquivel excused, Freeman, here. Gay, Gay, here. Greer, here. Halverson, Halverson, Harshman, Harshman excused, Harvey, here. Hunt, Yagi, here. Jennings, Kasparik, Kirkbride, here. Croker, excuse. Croker excused, Crone, excuse. Crone excused, Larson Lloyd, here. Larson Dan, here. Lindholm, here. Lockhart, here. Laux, here. Madden, here. McKim, McKim, here. Miller, excuse. Miller excused, Moniz, here. Nicholas, here. Northrup, Patton, here. Paxton, here. Pelkey, here. Pelkey, Pelkey, Pelkey excused, Petroff, Piperinen, Pennell, Reeder, Schwartz, here. Summers, here. Steinmetz, here. Stubson, here. Throne, Throne excused, Walters, here. Wilson, Winters, Winters, excused. Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker,
here.
Baker,
here.
Blackburn,
here.
Halverson,
here.
Pelkey,
here.
Croker,
here.
Crone,
here.
Miller, Esquivel, here. Okay. 57 present, 3 excused.
Our prayer for the day is offered by Pastor Ernest Fitzhugh, representing Unity Missionary Baptist Church.
Good morning. Let us pray. Our gracious Heavenly Father, we come to thank you for this day. This is the day that thou hast made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. We come, Lord, just to praise you for last night's rest. Thank you for waking us up this morning, having us closed in our right minds. Blessing us with the measurable portion of health and strength, and allowing us to come to this meeting. Lord, I pray for the representatives that are present here today, men and the women that enact the laws that governs the state, that's a help to the counties, to the cities, to the people. I just give you all the glory and all the government officials. Ask you to praise them, touch them, bless their families and their family members. Keep us all safe from the dangers seen and unseen as we go about on the streets of Cheyenne and on the highways and the byways of this state. We just thank you for all the many ways you bless us. We ask that all the bills that are being enacted, that you would touch those that are putting those bills into place. Now, Lord, thank you, lead, guide, and direct us, that we may do all things according to your will and to your pleasure. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Journal report.
Your journal committee reports that the journal of February 3rd, 2015 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed by Representative Steinmetz and Schwartz.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the West Balcony, my former desk mate, former representative from House District 12, Mr. Lee Filer and his daughter.
The doctor of the day is Christina Behringer from Cheyenne. The nurse of the day is Anna Raga from Campbell County Memorial Hospital. Please welcome them to the house. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 220, Wyoming Coal Specialty License Plate, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Kennedy, and Eklund. Those who vote no, Representative Laux, Readers, Walters, and Dave Swanitzer, signed by Representative Blake, Vice Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 233, Branch Bank License Expiration, respectfully report saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Gay, Kasparik, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, and Walters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Referrals. Representative Swanitzer, Chairman Swanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to refer House Bill 220 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
House Bill 220 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Vice Chairman Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 227 to Corporations.
House Bill 227 is re-referred from Appropriations to Corporations.
Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Miller, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer House Bill 187 to Appropriations, Committee Number 2.
House Bill 187 is re-referred to Appropriations Committee Number 2. Are there any other re-referrals? We're at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 77. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 77 from Representative Lindholm, an act relating to the Wyoming retirement system.
House Bill 77, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 112. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 112 from Representative Petroff, an act relating to administration of government.
House Bill 112, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 121. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 121 from Representative Dan Larson, an act relating to administration of government.
House Bill 121, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 122.
House Bill 122 from Representative Nicholas, an act relating to workers' compensation.
House Bill 122, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 126.
House Bill 126 from Representative Throne, an act relating to elections.
House Bill 126 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 135. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 135 from Representative Blackburn, an act relating to game and fish.
House Bill 135 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 136.
House Bill 136 from Representative Madden, an act relating to game and fish.
House Bill 136 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 154. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 154 from Representative Kirkbride, an act relating to game and fish.
House Bill 154 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 156. The reading clerk will read the bill. 155, I'm sorry. House Bill 155, the reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 155 from Representative Kirkbride, an act relating to game and fish.
House Bill 155 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 157. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 157 from Representative Harshman, an act relating to game and fish.
House Bill 157 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 159. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 159 from Representative Throne, an act relating to separate statewide riding assessment.
House Bill 159 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 172.
House Bill 172 from Representative Kasparik, an act relating to motor vehicles and placards for vehicles driven by persons with disabilities.
House Bill 172, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 177. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 177 from Representative Burkhart, an act relating to the collection of debts due to the state or other governmental entities.
House Bill 177, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 180. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 180 from Representative Crone, an act relating to child protection.
House Bill 180, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 181. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 181 from Representative Harshman, an act relating to speed limits.
There is an amendment. Chairman Zwanitzer, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, I'd like to withdraw a second reading amendment, and I'll bring it back on third reading when the sponsor's here.
Second reading amendment number one to House Bill 181 has been withdrawn. House Bill 181, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 182. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 182 from Representative Connolly, an act relating to the Personal Opportunity with Employment Responsibilities Program.
House Bill 182, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 198. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 198 from Representative Harshman, an act relating to compulsory attendance.
House Bill 198, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 215.
House Bill 215 from Speaker Brown, an act relating to community juvenile services boards.
House Bill 215, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objection, so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 7. The reading clerk will read the resolution.
House Joint Resolution 7 from Representative Burkhart, a joint resolution to the United States Secretary of Agriculture and the Chief of the United States Forest Service expressing support for timely and scheduled completion of rare element resources.
House Joint Resolution 7 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time, hearing no objections, so ordered. We're now at that order of business of bills on third and final reading. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the consent list consisting of the following bills. House Bill 103, 108, 128, 130, 146, and House Joint Resolution 3.
Does anyone wish to have any of those bills removed from the consent list? Seeing none, the reading clerk will read the bills.
House Bill 103 from Representative Hunt, an act relating to career technical education, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 103, I'm sorry. House Bill 108 from Representative Miller, an act relating to property, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 128 from Representative Greer, an act relating to time requirements, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 130 from Representative Burkhart, an act relating to public pensions, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill 146 from Speaker Brown, an act relating to Uniform Trust Code, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Joint Resolution 3, from the Federal Natural Resource Management Committee, a joint resolution requesting Congress, state, and local authorities to take action to remediate damages caused by free-roaming wild horses, be it enacted by the State of Wyoming.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake,
aye.
Burkhart,
aye.
Bird,
aye.
Campbell,
aye.
Kennedy,
aye.
Clem,
aye.
Connolly,
aye.
Gayton,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Edwards,
aye.
Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman excused, Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jennings,
aye.
Kasparik,
aye.
Kirkbride,
aye.
Croker, Crone, Larson Lloyd, Larson Dan, Lindholm, Lockhart, Lauchs, Madden, McKim, Miller, Miller, Moniz, Nicholas, Northrup, Patton, Paxton, Pelkey, Petroff, Piperinen, Pinnell, Reeder, Schwartz, Summers, Steinmetz, Stubson, Throne, Walters, Wilson,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused. As to House Bill 103, are there any changes? Are there any? Yagi, aye to no. Stubson, aye to no. Winters, aye to no. Greer, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Jennings, aye to no. Madden, aye to no. Nicholas, aye to no. Edmonds, aye to no. Burkhart, aye to no. Larson Lloyd, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 47 aye, 12 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 108, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Pelkey, aye to no. Bird, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 aye, 3 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 128, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 59 aye, 1 excused. As to House Bill 130, are there any changes? Esquivel, aye to no. Byrd, aye to no. Pelkey, aye to no. Zwanitzer Dave, aye to no. Croker, aye to no. Halverson, aye. Tonneau. Gay, aye. Tonneau. Madden, aye. Tonneau. Blake, aye. Tonneau. Wilson, aye. Tonneau. Are there Patton, aye. Tonneau. Are there further changes? The vote is closed. 48 aye, 11 no, 1 excused. As to House Bill 146, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused. As to House Joint Resolution 3, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bills 103, 108, 128, 130, 146, and House Joint Resolution 3 have passed the House. Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, please proceed.
Members of this body, I want to introduce you to a very special man that's sitting in the gallery behind you here, Mr. Lloyd Baker. He is 103 years old. Still working, still driving. Welcome to our chamber.
Welcome to the House, Mr. Baker. It's nice to have you here. We're at that order of business of bills on third and final passage. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 137. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 137 from Representative Northrup, an act relating to child custody and visitation, be it enacted by the state of Wyoming.
There are two amendments. I'm going to take them in the opposite order that they're numbered. Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the amendment, we're amending the word or the portion that has to do with joint custody by adding in the word joint legal custody. If you have that amendment, that way that this conforms with what a particular email that's been going around. That person has asked that be put in, and also one of the University of Wyoming. I'm sorry. The people over the hill also have said so. With that, I'd like to move. What is it? I'm going to find it again. Third reading amendment number 2. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. Question being called. We're voting on third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 137. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Third reading amendment number 2 has passed. Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move third reading amendment number 1 on House Bill 137. This amendment removes line 10, which is the line that enacts it. I will be happy to withdraw that motion after discussion. May I proceed? This is a bill that did not receive any discussion at first reading. And I believe it's actually a bill with pretty significant impacts regarding divorce cases. The current language gives a judge latitude to use a combination of joint, shared, or sole custody. And the issue is not about legal custody, but more about physical custody. Up until now, the preference has been, and my understanding, this is based somewhat on holdings of the Supreme Court, that they encourage sole physical custody as a benefit to the children, that it provides more stability in their lives following what is generally a difficult experience for them in a divorce. It can still involve shared legal custody, liberal visitation, but as I said, it seems to provide the best option for stability. The new language basically says that the options that a judge should prefer are either joint or shared custody. My understanding is judges are not as comfortable with this. They feel that a joint custody situation requires that the parents communicate and collaborate well, which may or may not be the case. My ultimate conclusion is this is a complicated issue. I think we should discuss it. My preference would actually be that it went to an interim committee discussion, and with that, I will stop for now and let others discuss it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Against the amendment and for the bill, as a good representative from the county with the large mountains stated, this is a complicated issue, and there are a lot of factors that the courts need to consider in these types of cases. This bill is a result of a couple of court decisions, our highest court's decisions, regarding custody and regarding the type of language that needs to be contained in the statute. It's a result of saying that a shared custody or a joint custody arrangement is not currently in the statutes and is not preferred by the courts. But what we're seeing in certain cases regarding domestic relations are judgments that don't take into consideration even that option. And that option should be considered, and that option should be available for courts to order. And that's what this bill does. This bill comes in and says, let's see if we can have, in the best interest of the children, a joint or shared custody arrangement. Let's look at that first. And if there's a preponderance of the evidence, which is the lowest legal standard, that that's not the case, then look at the other options. So I think that these statutes need to be amended. If this bill were not to move forward, I agree. I think this is something that should be looked at in the interim, and it's an important topic for Wyoming families. So I would urge you to vote against the amendment and for the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and in favor of the amendment and against the bill. And, you know, I really appreciate the good representative from Teton County bringing this, because as I sat through the debate, there wasn't really a debate, but as I sat through the lack of debate, I guess, I had several questions in my own mind, because I don't do work in this area, but it sure seemed to be a pretty significant change, and yet there was really no discussion on it. And so I went back and started talking to folks that do work in this area and kind of confirmed my suspicion that this is not just a little tweak. This is not just a matter of you should consider. This is a matter of this is the way it's going to be unless you prove it otherwise. And it really sets aside the way this area of law has worked. Custody has worked for decades in this state. So we are rewriting the law of custody, and it seems to me like we should actually know what we're doing. That, you know, it's one of those oaths we should take when we come down here, do no harm, and I'm just not sure that we have done that through this bill. You know, I know the source behind this bill, and we probably all received emails through the interim that there a gentleman who felt like he was done wrong in his custody hearing, and he may well have been, but I woke up in the middle of the night the other night thinking, you know, you really shouldn't legislate based on an example of one. And I'm afraid that's what we're doing here. As I reached out to both lawyers and judges across the state, I found out that, you know, this is considered and it can be considered. But the reason why you see shared custody so rarely is it really depends upon some parents that get along, that can negotiate those sort of challenges of everyday life. And if you don't have that, the reason they don't allow it is because you turn the kid into essentially the rope in a game of tug of war. And judges have recognized that that's not a good thing. And so you already have in the current law that these decisions have to be made based upon the best interests of the child. And so what we are saying and stepping in is the legislature is saying this is the best interest of the child unless you can prove otherwise. And, you know, maybe that is a good step to take. I don't know. But it seems to me the last representative that spoke talked about an interim study, and I always think that's sort of a cop-out. But when you're making a big change like this, when you are fundamentally changing the way that divorced parents deal with custody of their kids, it seems to me like you need to look at all the angles and make sure that you get it right.
We have the amendment here that changed, that inserted the term legal. I still don't think that gets to the heart of the issue, because then you go through and you're still talking about, you're defining shared custody as physical custody. And what I've learned is that courts actually, on joint legal custody, that's pretty typical. What you usually have is joint legal custody. You usually have one parent with primary physical custody of the child, liberal visitation rights, and that's how. But that's not to say that they don't award joint and shared custody. They just require a showing that that's actually in the best interest of the child. The other concern with this bill is, because you're changing the way things have worked for so long, in these situations, oftentimes you have modifications. You have parents coming in, and there's modifications of support, modifications of custody. And so what, at least as I read the bill, you're putting a new sort of rule of the road in. And so you come in for modification, and all of a sudden you're being evaluated under an entirely different standard. And so you could see arrangements that may have worked fine for 10 years all of a sudden being undermined because we decided that it was best to change the way it works. I would just suggest, again, caution on behalf of the body. This is not my area. I'm certainly no expert. This may end up being the way that we think we should go, but I would suggest that we should look at it long and hard, really understand the consequences on existing custody orders, the workloads of the court. When you see courts across the country that have this type of arrangement, typically they have a family court, because it talks about you have to present evidence, and it really increases the amount of court time you need in these sorts of proceedings. And so we need to understand all those sorts of issues before we really go across this huge chasm. So I would urge caution, ask you to vote no on the bill, and it's certainly an issue we can look at going forward.
Representative Gurr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition of the amendment and in support of the bill. And the last speaker did a good job, but a little bit of qualification. I haven't done one of these types of cases in 15 years, and I haven't gone through this myself, thank goodness. However, I do have partners that practice in this area, and this is not based upon one circumstance. What has happened, because, as the bringer of the amendment said, you'll read through the Supreme Court cases, and they have gone along with it, is what we'd call joint custody, where the parents share decision-making, but the child lives with one particular parent most of the time, and or the sole custody arrangement, which is in the best interest of the child, that child should be raised by one parent, and there's usually darn good reasons for that. And because of that, the district court judges, they go down a path where they're not going to get these things appealed or overturned. And so what you find in some jurisdictions is they won't even look at a shared custody arrangement when that is in the best interest of the child. And so what we're talking about are parents that get divorced but still can get along, and they want both the mother and the father to be involved in that child's life. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And in today's world, we all know that it takes two parents to raise a child properly. And so when we have judges that say, no, I'm not going to do that, as a matter of course, that's wrong. And that was the impetus for this bill. The other thing that happens, that's the undercurrent here that people need to be aware of, whether this is good or bad for this bill or not, but when you go with one parent having custody, then you get child support. And because of the way child support is calculated, the term liberal visitation is limited, because once you get past too many days of visitation to the non-custodial parent, the custodial parent loses the prize. That is the child support amount goes down significantly. And so what you run into is a great deal of bickering and fighting over that prize, and not what's in the best interest of the child. And therefore, your liberal visitation does not become so liberal, but is limited based upon financial concerns. So, just the concept of an interim study is not a bad one on this. However, even if this does change, it sends a clear message, which is our job as the policymakers of this state. It sends a clear message to our judges that you need to look at this shared custody arrangement. You need to factor that in as what is in the best interest of the child. You need to determine whether or not these parents actually can do this or not. But that's what we need to rely upon our judges to do. And it's not consistent to the state. You talk to certain attorneys, and some judges are great with it, and others are just, no, I don't do that. I don't consider that. So that's the message that we send as a policymaker. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Pelkey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rising in favor of the amendment in opposition to the bill and in full support of the cop-out. This is an attempt to change statutory and case law dating back for decades, and I think we're moving a little quickly on this. Frankly, as an attorney who does practice in the family area, albeit reluctantly, this should not be the default position. There are so many cases where this is an option, but key among those cases is where we have relatively adult parents acting in a cooperative fashion, and unfortunately that isn't always the case. This bill also addresses some changes in the support calculations, and again, these are all issues that need to be addressed. Wyoming family law is not perfect. It needs to be, we need to comb through that with a fine-tooth comb, but we should not impose on district court judges in this state a default position that puts a burden on one or both of the parties to show that joint physical custody is not an option.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the 63rd, let's admit it, divorce is like a death in the family. It's a very emotional time. I've never been there. And so I'm just speaking from the people that have talked to me about it. They said, you're at your worst. You're fighting, you're bickering, you've been that way. Your mate has told you they no longer want to be with you. It's very hurtful, and the judge sees them at their worst. With that in mind, sometimes judges make a decision that favors a person in that particular divorce totally and 100%, and it leaves the other person out of the issue except for just giving a monetary reward for that decision. And so, therefore, I'm standing on and against this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
This is a little out of my field, but I've had constituents that have approached me and wondered if we can, you know, if we can pass some laws that change the culture of the courts. And I'm not sure that we can or should do that. But something that isn't always considered in the best interest of the child is a favor towards probably more towards the mom than the father, without taking in all of the considerations. And I base that, since I'm not an attorney and I haven't been through some of these cases, you'd say, well, he's not best qualified to do that. I do know of three cases. One of them I kind of agree the court needed to have some caution. The poor kids are going to probably lose no matter what. But there are two other cases that I know of in which I had to say, when they were done, what was the court thinking? Because they easily had a better choice than what they did when it came to custody. So I'm going to stand in favor of the bill and hope that if it doesn't pass, we at least do an interim topic to try to change the culture in Wyoming to favor the joint custody more in this deal. Anyway, that's kind of my two cents, and that's what I know. Thank you.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For many years, I did a lot of cases like this. I do very few now, but I still do some on occasion. And as I'm sitting here listening to debate, I'm thinking, you know, we're not even getting the full essence of what this means and how the courts treat divorces, and it really is a short shrift to the whole system. First of all, the child is always the premier interest in a divorce if there's a child on the part of the court and on a guardian ad litem or whoever is appointed on what's going on. And so the number one overlying factor is the child. This changes that. This says that the number one consideration is going to be joint custody. And I'm going, wow, that's a heck of a change. Why in the world would we do that? And the reason we're doing it is because of some folks in some jurisdictions don't rule the way that they like. And that's all this bill is, honestly. And that's not how we ought to go about fixing this law. Right now, most courts do joint custody if it's requested. But typically what they do is they do primary custody with joint primary residence with joint custody. And that's a good thing because most of the studies, and you know, it depends on the parents involved. It always does. But most studies say, in general, particularly in beginning years of years 1 through 5 or 1 through 7, you need a primary residence and a person that can always be there for the police, for issues, for school issues, for hot doctors, things. You need a primary residence. And particularly, I would say, if it's, you know, if all things being equal, if it's a daughter, then I mean the science says it's better to be reared by a mom unless there's some problems with it. And so there are some courts who tend to lean towards a mother in certain situations. But trust me, when I was practicing this, it was a toss-up, and it had always more to do with how the mother or the father presented on the stand, what expert witnesses you bring up, and what they testify to in regards to not what is in the best interest of the parent on either side, but what's in the best interest of the child. And so, you know, you can say all you want, but right now our judges do the very best they can with the facts that's presented to them. And you can't, and so this is fundamentally changing what that is and saying it's going to be shared custody first, and then if you can prove otherwise, in other words, even if it's not in the best interest of the child, but this is what the parents want, and that's what we're going to do. And honestly, I don't think that's a good change. It's just a tough thing, and I could talk about it a lot more, but I'm just on and for the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In my day job, I advocate for youth and families and encounter many families who have single parents. The question that we need to ask, of course, and this is what the court decides, is what is in the best interest of the child. And many times we see that it is not in the best interest of children to be raised only by one parent, which often turns out to be the case. A previous speaker mentioned that courts see parents at their worst, and they do, and it is emotionally charged. And we know by science that when there's a high level of emotion, you're not thinking with the cortex part of your brain. Your limbic system is actually kicking in, and a lot of times irrational decisions are made. I think it is best, working in this field is always best when you have two parents who are involved, and really what this is suggesting is to courts, should we, changing the default from one person who has custody to joint custody, having both parents involved versus just one. Not to say that in sole custody the other parent isn't involved, because a lot of times that is the case. However, this is saying that both parents have a vested interest and both parents are making those decisions, which is really what it ought to be in a lot of cases. Not all, but I think it should be the default. Again, it comes down to the best interest of the child, and I think this is the best interest of the child. I think this is the best default. What we're seeing across America and what we're seeing across Wyoming doesn't work a lot of times. And so with that, I would urge you to vote in favor of the bill. Thank you.
Anyone else for the first time? Anyone for the second time before the sponsor? Representative Nicholas.
Just a quick response and a follow-up. Joint custody only works if you have two cooperating adults, and that is not typically the case. And then if you look at other components of the bill, it talks about it's the default if they're 50 miles apart. So if a parent lives here and a parent lives over the hill, which is 45 miles away, that means it's joint custody, and somehow they got to be taking that child back and forth over the hill three times a week, or once a week. And how do you divide it up? 1 week here, 1 week there, 3 days here, 3 days there. I mean, there are so many things involved. And to address the responsibility of the parents, this bill has nothing to do with the responsibility of the parents. Both parents are always completely and 100% responsible for their child, regardless if they have physical custody or not. And they should be as active in that child's life as humanly possible if they're going to be a good parent. That doesn't have anything to do with this bill. So I think that's a red herring argument. Thank you.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Line 6, page 2. Custody shall be crafted to promote the best interests of the children. Children have their best interest when both parents are involved in their upbringing. And I would just say, vote your conscience. Thank you.
Anyone else for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It was my intent in introducing this amendment to create an opportunity for discussion, and I'm very appreciative of the discussion that has occurred. I remain against the bill, but withdraw the motion.
Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 137 has been withdrawn. Third, House Bill 137, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Allen.
Aye.
Baker.
Aye.
Baldwin.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
No.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Dayton.
No.
Edmonds.
No.
Edwards.
Yes.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay. Greer.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman excused. Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jennings.
No.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas. Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Pipirinen.
No.
Pinnell.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Schwartz.
No.
Summers.
Aye.
Steinmetz.
Aye.
Stubson.
No.
Throne.
No.
Walters.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 32 aye, 27 no, 1 excused.
House Bill 137, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 137 has passed the House. We have one standing committee report. Three standing committee reports. Mr. Reading Clerk.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 197, Emergency Vehicles-Tow Trucks and Wreckers, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass of following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Allen, Blake, Campbell, Kennedy, Eklund, Laux, Reeder, Walters, and Dave's Wanitzer, signed by Dave's Wanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, who was referred House Bill 212, Workers' Compensation Claim Apportionment, respectfully reports back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass of following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Gay, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, and Walters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 237, Water and Sewer District Contracts, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Gay, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, and Walters, one no vote, Representative Edmonds, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
We're now at that order of business of introduction. Bills on general file. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to have a privilege of the floor first.
Please, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The first thing I'd like to do, ladies and gentlemen, that I hear a lot of unhealthiness going on, and I don't like to be the mother of all of you, but I would like you, one, to drink a lot of water, two, use antiseptic, three, take a lot of vitamin C, four, get a lot of sleep. We need to have you be healthy and strong. You have a lot of heavy lifting to do, in particular next week. So be well, my friends, okay? Start doing a lot of the elbow stuff. And with that, also, Mr. Speaker, I would like to let you know that we have many brilliant college interns that are at our beck and call that can do research and assist us with research and with our bill work. And we want to make certain that we have the best bill presentations when we go to the other side of the Capitol next week. So please get a hold of Mrs. Copsa and our interns up on the third floor and have them start helping you with some work. They're really some brilliant people, and you would enjoy their association. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole for our general file. We do have one change that I would like to make. Our first bill for today on general file is House Bill 149. The next bill will be 152. I will move House Bill 143 down to where 152 is in place. That is the only change that I will make at this time. And also take 187 off the list. And with that,
what was that last bill number, Madam Majority Floor Leader?
House Bill 187 has been removed from general file for today.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Edwards.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor. Ladies and gentlemen of the 63rd, we have an elementary class visiting us today. It's Mr. Hartigan's 5th grade elementary from Henderson Elementary. We'll have two groups coming in here, but the first group's here. This is Mr. Hartigan's 5th grade class. Let's show them some good debate this morning.
Welcome to the House. Representative Petroff. Okay. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 149. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 149 from Representative Crone, an act relating to game and fish, increasing the percentage of non-resident elk, deer, and antelope licenses available through a special drawing and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 149, Special Non-Resident Hunting License Draw, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Clem, Freeman, Kirkbride, Larson, Petroff, Schwartz, Steinmetz, and one no vote, Representative Barlow, signed by Representative Petroff, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 149 do pass. I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. The amendment simply changes the enactment date, so if there are no questions on the amendment, I'll call for the question.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Back to the bill.
I move the. I'll pass the explanation of the bill over to Representative Crone.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the 63rd, I bring you House Bill 149, dealing with non-resident hunting licenses. And basically, as the body, members of the body are probably aware, our system for licenses is a two-tier system. So we have a special license, and we have a regular license. And right now, under current statute, the special license allocation for non-resident hunters is 40%, and the regular licenses are 60%. And what this bill does, it reverses those numbers, making the special licenses 60% of the total licenses and regular 40%. And just to give you some background, currently for a special license for an elk would be at $1,071. The regular license would be $591. For deer, the special license would be $552, and the regular license would be $312. For antelope, it would be special license 512 and regular license 272. So that there's the two tiers. When someone applies for that special license, they have a better chance of receiving that license. And I think some of the factors that are important in this bill, number one, it has nothing to do with more licenses for non-resident hunters. It keeps the number of licenses the very same. Number two, it has nothing to do with resident hunting at all. So it's separate and apart from resident hunting. It does not decrease resident access to licenses. It doesn't decrease or increase any fees for resident hunters. So you ask, what does this switch mean? What does this change mean? And what it means is that with the higher percentage, you have more money going to the Game and Fish Department, about $450,000, in additional fees that would be generated with just this change, without any additional licenses and without any additional work. In addition, these folks that want to try for these special licenses are going to be the folks that want to come and spend money in the communities and hire an outfitter and go along those lines. So it's a small change with a pretty big impact to the budget for Game and Fish, and I would urge your aye vote. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this bill. Part of my day job is guiding hunters and talking to non-resident hunters and resident hunters around the state and the world and the country. And what I see this bill as is a win-win. It's an opportunity for additional income to the Game and Fish Department, which is always a good thing. And it kind of makes up for some of the free stuff we gave away yesterday. And those were all good bills, but this is a way to really recoup that money, not pass that privilege on to the general taxpayer in this state. This is out, excuse me, this is outside money. These are people that are willing to pay for that privilege and that opportunity. So what I see this bill as is it is about opportunities, about creating those opportunities, but also it's a free market kind of a deal. If people are willing to pay more, what is wrong with that? I don't see the problem there. The other thing is I would like to explain the hunting market to you. It's not static. It's not it's like any market. There are all kinds of consumers at all different points in their life. Different budgets, different needs, different reasons, and so forth. Okay, so essentially with the hunting market, the non-resident hunting market, we've got the do-it-yourselfers, and we have those that either have friends here that will take them, or they hire a guide or an outfitter. So the people that want to do it yourself, a lot of times live in a close state, or a state close by, excuse me, and they don't, they're willing to take their chance with a lower price license because if they don't get it, it's not that big of a deal. They can still hunt in Colorado or Utah or South Dakota or Nebraska. But that's by having these lower price licenses for them, it gives them an opportunity to apply for them. But then there's another segment of the market, and those are the people that are at that stage in their life that their kids are gone, their mortgage is paid down, and they're at a place in time where they can finally take the time and come up with the money to book one of these hunts or go with a friend in Wyoming. They are at a point in their life when they say, you know, I'm not 30 anymore. I'm 65 or I'm 60 or whatever. And this is kind of my last chance to go on a nice big Western big game hunt. And for that opportunity, I am willing to pay an extra $200-some for an antelope license or an extra $480 for an elk license. They are willing to pay it for a slightly better chance, depending on the species in the area. So, fell off. And one other thing that's really critical to understand about the whole funding formula for the Game and Fish Department, 60 to 80% of their income comes from non-resident license sales. It is what drives the department. It is essentially a subsidization of our resident hunting fees, really. And so these people are willing to pay for the privilege and the opportunity to come to Wyoming, but yet they get a small fraction of the licenses. For example, with the limited quota elk licenses, the way that is allocated is the non-residents get 16% of the tags, and the residents get 84% of the tags. So here we have those 16 hunters, or 16% of the hunters, excuse me, are paying 60 to 80% of the cost of wildlife management. So they're carrying the burden. This bill is a really simple bill. It just reverses those percentages. It allows a free market choice to the non-resident hunter. Does he want to increase his chance of getting the license by paying that extra fee and essentially carrying the burden of wildlife management for the state of Wyoming? Or is he willing to, or is, would he rather say, I don't need to go hunting that bad this year. I'll take my chances with the lower draw and lower odds draw, which is usually the regular draw, and I'll go that route. Or he has another choice. He can say, I am willing to buy all these preference points, and if I wait 3 years, 2 or 3 years, depending on the species in the area, I can still get a license at the lower price, excuse me. So I hope I didn't confuse a really simple bill. I probably did. But the point is, if they want to pay, what's wrong with it? Let them pay that extra fee, because we all benefit. The wildlife benefits, the state benefits. So thank you. I'll stand for any questions.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had this bill a couple of years ago and voted it down. And everything that you've just heard from our good colleague is true, but I want to stress one of the things that he's talking about. It's a free market choice for the non-resident hunters. And right now, if you're a regular hunter, a regular non-resident hunter, and you want to apply for these, any of these tags, you have 60% of those going. So a regular hunter without buying preference points is going to get 60% of these non-resident tags. So, and was said, we're not upping any tags to anybody, but we're just going to reallocate. So a resident hunter not putting in for a special preference point has right now 60%. What we're doing here is we're turning that around. So the regular hunter that just wants to apply is going down to 40%, and those that want to pay the extra about $500, $300, $200, depending on which species, if you want to buy a preference point to have a better chance to draw, you can do that, and it is free market. And my heartburn with this is we're having 60% of the licenses go to those that are going to pay the big bucks, and, of course, that's where the $450,000 is going to come in, increased revenue for the game and fish. And so now we're taking the 60% of regular non-resident licenses and we're putting them into the 40%. Those that want to pay the extra money, we're bringing up to 60%. So there's the choice. And as was just stated, it's your choice if you want to pay the extra money and increase your odds. That's what you can do. And my only concern with this is we're taking the regular hunter and putting him down to 40. Those that want to pay the extra money, we're putting them up to 60. So, and I've had this conversation with my good colleague here. Are we creating a rich man's sport? And he answered some of those questions. For circumstances, it's a good thing that you can pay the extra money and guarantee you're going to get that tag in 1, 2, 3 years, depending on where you put in. And if you're a non-resident, you really look at these areas and you know your choices or your chances, and so you're going to do all the things that was just said. So my concern with this is we're just reversing the 40 and 60%. 60% for those that want to pay the extra money and the 40% of the regular hunters. So we just tip that upside. Well, we reverse that. So that's your choice. And I'm still concerned with this as I was 2 years ago. I like it left as it is, so the regular hunter doesn't have to put in the extra 500,
300, 200, whatever it is. I would just as soon leave it the way it is. Thank you.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to our colleague from House District 19 and quite frankly, the testimony before the committee is that there's a lot of demand right now for these non-resident tags. There's a lot of demand. The special tags are in high demand. And I would just ask members of the body to look at these figures. They're reasonable figures. The special, just to mention again, the special tag for elk, 1,071 versus 591 for the regular tag, 552 versus 312 for the deer tag, antelope 512 versus 272. So I don't think these figures, first of all, the prices as they exist now, and we're not asking for any modification in those fees, are reasonable, and they're reasonable for the non-resident hunters. And I would just say that the demand is out there and that we're not pricing anyone from out of state out, and it's just part of the free market. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Baldwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to add one perspective to this, and I do stand on and in favor of the bill. And that perspective is one I shared in committee, and that was we talk a lot here about regular hunters and about normal hunters. I consider myself one of those, although the committee said I was a little abnormal. I spent a lot of time going to other states and other countries hunting, as the other good representatives have discussed. And there's a misperception that it's the hunters that are going out there that are rich or the abnormal hunters. And I've not witnessed that in all the places that I've been. These are normal people, normal day-to-day jobs, who are willing to pay that little bit of extra. Or as the good representative said, they're at that time in their life when they feel like they want to go out and do it. And the money that we're talking about is a very minimal amount. And I think that it's just a misperception that needs to be cleared. It's not necessarily all rich people out there hunting. They're going out of state or out of country hunting. And this includes out of country hunters, too, which has not been mentioned. This isn't just people from another state, two states north of us or three states south of us. This is people from out of country that are coming and doing this, and they're spending a lot of money to come do it. And I think it's a great bill, and it's a win-win for us. And I would stand in favor of the bill.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not a crime to be affluent. And it's not a crime to pay more for something that is in limited demand or supply. So, you know, the rich versus the regular or whatever, it just doesn't carry that much weight with me. I've traveled to Alaska to hunt, and, you know, whatever the state determines is what their wildlife is worth, either I have a choice. I either pay it or I don't hunt. So, but anyway, back to this bill on and for it, if we don't vote this up, we're leaving money on the table. It is clearly demonstrated that there is money that there are people that are willing to pay that extra money. So we would be walking away from almost $500,000. The other great thing about the way the system is set up currently, and this would not change, and that is if these permits are not sold, they roll down to the regular category. If they're not sold there, they roll down to where anybody can get those permits, residents or even non-residents. I think they go to the residents first. I think they get first opportunity. I don't play that game. Some people do. But the point is, other than a very few areas in the northeast corner of this state where they have too many antelope and not enough hunters, these permits are sold. The wildlife management is a pretty specific whatever. what's the word I'm looking for? These seasons and quotas are carefully come up with, these plans. What am I trying to say? And so they know how many animals they want to harvest, and they know how many hunters they need to do it. So it's a carefully regulated system, and I just urge you to vote for this. One last thing, and I'll let you go. There is competition. Wyoming is not the only state with antelope and deer and elk. All the surrounding states have those species, and so do the Canadian provinces. So the traveling hunter has a choice. And we've got to not exclude that segment of the market. So thank you.
Are you ready for the question?
That's all right.
Question being called, all those. Ms. Petroff, Representative Petroff, Chairman Petroff, get that right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and in favor of the bill, I just wanted to clear up that what happens to if they're not sold is they then go down to the 40% category, so we still capture what we would have captured if they don't sell, and then they go down to non-residents. So basically, choice of paying more, if they don't want to pay more, then it rolls down into the lower price license.
Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Petroff's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the due pass, the bill number HB 149. All those in favor of the buildings bill say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
Bill 149 passed. Having called for a division, if those that are in favor of Bill 149, if you'll please rise. House Bill 149 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 152. There we go. 152. Yeah. I'm looking at the wrong pile. Chairman Madden. Oh, forgot. If you will, the hearing clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 152 from Representative Madden, an act relating to impact assistance payments, revising duties of the Department of Environmental Quality and Industrial Siting Division as specified, revising how impact assistance payments amounts are calculated, providing rulemaking authority, repealing conflicting provisions, providing applicability, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whose referred House Bill 152, Industrial Siting Impact Payments, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Edmonds, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Somers, and Walters. One no vote, Representative Gay, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman, further reviewed by your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 152, reports the same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Conley, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 152 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment that will be explained by the bringer of the bill, and there's also a Committee of the Whole that will be introduced at the appropriate time. So I'd like to turn the explanation and standing committee bill over to our good chairman from House District 40.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ladies and gentlemen, before I start this, I want to put the I want to get the standing committee take bill or standing committee amendment taken care of. And it's just a cleanup, actually. You might recall from very early in our session, we had a House Bill number 20 from the Capital Finance and Investment Committee, and we'd had a cleanup bill in there to clean up the duties of the treasurer. And if we had left that in, it was a good catch, because this is the way it's done. The Department of Revenue is the one that's involved, not the treasurer. So I would move, unless there's questions, I'd move that we approve House Bill or the Standing Committee Amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh.
Representative Patton.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the amendment, I would like the explanation, however, to reassure what we were doing there. There should be a clause someplace in here that the transaction is, in fact, reported to the state treasurer, but not the active party to it.
Aaron Madden.
Thank you. That would be appropriate, but, of course, where we changed it in House Bill 20, it already does tell that. It already says that the custodian of the money is the treasurer, and it wouldn't have to be in this amendment. So I call it for the question.
Question being called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No?
Okay, then we might as well get this other housekeeping one done, too. This is Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, and we'll let the sponsor of that amendment explain it.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, this, too, is just a housekeeping bill. If you look on page 2, line 9 at the very end, where it makes a reference and says, and 3512.113a, Romanent 6, that is a statute that doesn't exist. And so that was probably put in bygone years, but Minerals Committee, once again, with its thoroughness and eagle eye, caught that mistake and would like to have it removed. And so we'd ask for your support on that amendment.
Question being called. All those in favor of the standing committee, the committee of the whole number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed to the committee of the whole standing amendment number 1, please say no. Maybe I need
passed.
To start over?
No, it passed.
Okay. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 is passed. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now I'll explain the bill, and my goal is to make sure I don't spill over into the 21st minute. And that's why you've got an example, or actually a handout you should find, that has MKM on the bottom of it, and there's some text there. It's one of those deals where a picture is worth 1,000 words. The genesis of this bill, ladies and gentlemen, is a result of an interim committee work that we had done in the Revenue Committee a year or two ago, where during testimony was documented there's been a disconnect between the costs of impacts to local governments and the actual amount of assistance payments made. And state agencies have, noticed this and realized this for a long time, but nobody has gone to the trouble to fix it until we worked on it a couple years ago. First of all, some of you that are new, especially, this only applies to very large industrial siting projects. And in essence, the very nature of this thing is that we've got in statute a provision where local governments, when they are the host of an industrial siting activity, that we try to make them whole on their local government costs.
And these costs can vary from, you know, the nature of them can be added roads, perhaps, or it could be, you know, added law enforcement, traffic, you know, just because these projects are very big. I think they're $200 million or over. So, you know, it does have impacts. And when you're a small county, you need to be compensated for that. And this bill, of course, only deals with the unmitigated costs. We have mitigated and unmitigated costs, and sometimes in the industrial siting process, a company will say, yes, we know we're going to have to build this road. And, of course, they may build the road to the county specs and turn it over to them. But, of course, that wouldn't be that's what we call mitigated then. We wouldn't expect that to be paid again. Now, in order to really understand how important this is, you need to know how it works right now. And the way it works you have a residual. But what they do is they look at the sales taxes the county brings into that county the 12 months prior to the industrial project starting, okay? And then what they do is they say, well, the next year, during when all this construction activity is going on, or the next years, any residual above this base period amount. See, the base period is the 12 months prior to the beginning of the project, and then any residual above that will be due the local governments. And it doesn't say in the statute right now whether it's the taxes that are paid by the industrial project itself through buying materials and stuff. It just says whatever it is, it is. Okay? And with this bill, there's two critical changes in the algorithm. First of all, impacts are projected by local governments and the industry, and then reconciled by the Industrial Siting Council. So now, with this bill, we will have some kind of a closed system, if you will. We'll know how much needs to be compensated. Then the amount equal to these impacts is distributed from the state portion of the sales tax that arises due to this the project expenditures that are taking place. And it's only up to the amount of the impacts. And it's not really a controversial concept, but the technical issue we have now with the algorithm is statisticians say that we have a under-identified model here. In other words, we have one less equation than what we need, or else we need a exogenous variable or something. So this will take care of it, because we're going to solve that with the amount of an estimate of the amount of local impacts that are held. Now, to see this really easy, turn to the second page of that three-page handout, and I'll just show you how the arithmetic works. This is a pretend project here, okay? And what we have done here for, this is only 6 months, but we're saying that the base amount of sales tax is $100,000. And that was the result, normally, of adding up 12 months of sales tax and dividing by 12, and say on an average month over that previous year, this county brought in $100,000 of sales tax. Now, don't worry about the fact that this is a small number. If you want to move the decimal place over one or two places, it's probably more realistic. But the principle is here. All right, now, during the process of the actual project, that's the second column where it says actual sales. And then, remember I said it's a residual that the local government gets. And since the actual sales in period one, or month one, was $90,000, the base amount was $100,000, so there's nothing left. In fact, the worst you can do is get a compensation of zero. The next month is $110,000, so there's $10,000, and that would be a residual that's available for local governments to defray their costs. The next month is $99,000, so that's still lower than $100,000, so there's nothing. Then the year, month four, there's $20,000, and then in month five, it's 110 minus 100, you get 10,000. And you got a running total there at the bottom, and we come up with
let's just say at the end of 6 months, this project is done, and the local government ended up with $41,000. Now, who can tell me whether this $41,000 is too high or too low? Well, there's nobody in here that can tell me, because I haven't told you what the cost to the local government was, right? And that's what this bill does. It closes the system by identifying the local impacts that are accrued. Now, if you go to the third page, I'll show you where we have a failure in the model simply because of happenstance. If you look at page three, you'll take that middle line first. This is a utopian world where the taxable or the sales revenue for this county through time, of course, you go from left to right, you're going through time, and you can see that this county has a flat trajectory. It's a steady sales tax stream. And then you'll note that I've marked a point or a span of this as BP, okay? And that's the base period, okay? That's the base period, and that's where this $100,000 a month came from, all right? And it was no big deal for them because it was about $100,000 every month. And then the next part you see there with that dotted, ugly-looking line there, that's the sales taxes with the project. So there was a lump in the sales taxes, all right? The way that would work for this county is that they would be recipients of that lump, okay, whatever those sales taxes added up to be. And we don't know if that's what their costs were. We don't know if it's too high or too low. We just know that that's what it is. Okay, now we'll look at another one here. Look at the top one, and I want to show you that the luck of a local government is directly traceable to how lucky they are in finding the industrial project in reference to the overall business cycle. All right, so here we've got a county that is on a downswing, and note we caught the base period when it was on the way down, and then further down, the sales taxes with the project started. But look what happened to the base period. The base period numbers are up there where I've drawn that line, right where it says base period. This poor county doesn't end up with nothing just because of the luck of the draw. If that project had been built in the upswing of a business cycle, look at what would happen at the bottom here. The bottom panel here shows that the base period is referenced on the upswing of the cycle. So you come up with that average, right, where I've written BP. That's about the average for that 12-month cycle. And then the amount of sales taxes that are paid by the project is that dotted area above and beyond where the cycle is going up anyway. But what is it they get? They get everything. It would be the total amount from the base period measured vertically up to where it says project finish. So that, in a nutshell, is what the issue is, and here's how we solve it. If you look at page two of the bill, I'll just go through it quickly. Actually, we don't have to go through the whole bill. We just have to go through about five or six pages. Yeah. Six pages. The first change in the existing statute occurs on top here, providing technical assistance to local governments in the preparation of anticipated impacts related to a proposed project consistent with the industrial siting law. Okay, so that's the added, details that, the industrial siting department would be involved with. Okay, now you can see the difference on page three of what this bill does in terms of methodology. If you go to the top on page line, I'll start on line two there on page three. All right, we've stricken some language here, but let's just pretend it's still there and see how it reads. It says each payment to a county
treasurer shall be equal to the excess of each monthly payment made under paragraph Romanet 3 of this section during a period of construction over the base period amount. All right? So that's all it's saying. That's the only direction they got, was say anything over the base period amount goes to the county, and that's going to be stricken, and then it'll now read, each payment to the county treasurer shall be equal to an amount determined by the Industrial Siting Council and shall continue during the period of construction, and so forth, and then a case of it. Yeah. Okay. Now, in conjunction with the Industrial Siting Council's responsibility, there's a need for, counties affected by an industrial siting thing to come up with their idea of what they think their local government impacts are, and the industrial siting staff will look those over for evidence and so forth. And the other important section here I think you need to look at is on page 4. It says here on line number 5 of page 4, the impact assistant payment shall be distributed by the Department of Revenue in an amount and on a schedule determined by the council based on the evidence presented at the hearing. And then it says, under no circumstances shall the impact assistance payments exceed 2.76% of the total estimated material costs of the facilities. Now, the estimated material cost of a facility, that's not any extra work for the industrial siting staff, because that's a submittal that the industry provides. Okay? Another important feature of this, it says on line 20, a governing body which is primarily affected by the facility or any person issued a permit may petition the Industrial Siting Council for review and adjustment of the distribution ratio. So all that says, folks, is that if a county overlooks something, and they really did overlook it, it doesn't mean that the bridge has been burned. You can go back and say, wait a minute, we didn't realize this was going to be as big an impact as possible, and that will open it up for hearing. All right? Now, the other thing that I think you need to be aware of is that under our system right now, and we had testimony in committees, both committees that this has been to already, but testimony that sometimes the way the model works now, the sales tax, if the industrial project occurs in one county, it often can have impacts on a neighboring county. But we don't have a good way of parceling those out, and certainly we can't look at base period anymore. And it just doesn't work. So that's one thing to consider. This model, if there's two counties affected, if it's built right on a county line or something like that, or if it's a big county and a small county, and the small counties where the project goes and the big counties where the impacts are, or a lot of them are, you can allocate that out and treat both counties appropriately, whereas we can't now. Finally, I'll say the other advantage it has is that in the language that I put in here, it says that these payments will be distributed according to when they're needed. And those of you that have had industrial projects in your local communities know that there's kind of a front-end load to this kind of thing, right? I mean, the social cost, or the economic cost, I should say, of providing services doesn't necessarily fall into a nice uniform monthly cycle. Sometimes you have most of your costs will occur in the first 20% of the project itself, and this will be determined as part of this industrial siting aspect. The other thing I want to say is that there's no pushback possible from the standpoint of industry, because they're going to be building this, they're going to be paying their taxes, it's not going to cost them another penny, and it's just a way to treat local governments in a manner that actually consists of a model that is actually a closed
model that can come up with a unique solution. So that's the explanation, and I'll turn it over, I guess.
Madam Minority, Floor Leader Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that the good representative from the North has probably left me about 30 seconds of the 20 minutes, but I do want to just briefly give a little context for this. Industrial siding is what I frequently do in my day job. The purpose of the Industrial Siding Act, just to give you a little quick background, is to allow local governments to plan for and prepare for impacts from large industrial projects, power plants, refineries, large wind farms, that sort of thing. The impact assistance has really been sort of separate from what I do. It's been a formula that just kicks in, and the local governments get together and decide how to split up the money. But what has happened, because the formula is so arbitrary, is that as this bill tries to address, it doesn't really deal with the needs. And in the county where the good speaker likes to play golf, they have had some pretty bad experiences with impact assistance over the last 10 years, and I can give you one concrete example. The large refinery in that county did a massive overhaul, but it was not a project covered by the Industrial Siding Act. And then right after that happened, some of the large wind projects came in. And so the refinery project jacked up the sales tax base. And so when the wind projects came in a year later, the county really didn't get any impact assistance to deal with the impacts of the wind project, which were in a different part of the county from the refinery project. And it was a real problem, and that's what this bill tries to address. So we have a more tailored approach for impact assistance rather than an arbitrary formula that doesn't really do that much. Sometimes it's too much, sometimes it's too little, and doesn't really address the real needs. Thank you.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is on page 4. There is a... in the new language, actually on page 4 and then again on page 8, limiting the, putting a cap, if you will, on the impact assistance payment. I just wondered what the genesis of that is and how that plays into other parts of the Industrial Siding Act. The community that I hail from actually has these things, and putting caps on them, I just like to know what that comes from. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question. That is an oddball thing. Why is 2.76 in there? And here's the deal, folks. We're only talking about the state portion of the excise tax, sales and use tax, all right? But as many of you know, the state doesn't keep all 4%. They revert, I think it's 30% back to local governments. So what this does is say, well, what percent of these taxable sales is equivalent to 70% of the state rate, and that's the number they come up with. So all we're saying is that the impacts are going to be self-generating from the project itself, and it's not a matter of being short of money or anything like that, but it's just a kind of a safety catch there that I'm sure that has never been reached in any industrial siting application. You know, there's some other things on the testimony that we got. There's been all kinds of things that's happened. We had testimony from those that work in this issue or in this particular area for us that will tell you that we've never really paid the right amount to anybody yet. And when you look at the way it worked, you can see why they've never paid the right amount. And that's the whole issue. We had other, I think it's appropriate, okay for me to talk this way, but There's a county in the extreme southeast part of the state of Wyoming, they had a project there that triggered an industrial siting activity, and they ended up getting just a few thousand dollars, and they couldn't figure out why. Well, they backed up. Remember that base period we're talking about? That base period covered when they had the Olympics in the neighboring state to the west of them, and there's so much spillover from the Olympics that base period's taxable sales were elevated abnormally, and when the industrial siting project kicked in, there wasn't enough extra over and above that it was just a bad deal, and it should have been straightened out then, but it wasn't.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for clarification and some assurance that what we're doing here, not opposed to it at all, matter of fact, favor it, but making sure that if the material for the project comes in and is delivered in County A, but the project and the impact is in County B, that there's some assurance that County B actually gets not just its share, but gets that amount of taxes that are involved. And as you're well aware, Mr. Chairman, you're well aware that we had that occasion, and it cost County A $1 million when the error was found, there was no way to correct it.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just ditto to the good minority floor leader's comments. This is a good bill and has a lot of good impact in the future.
Representative Patton, or Madden, rather.
In answering Representative Patton's question, I have good news for him. That this is not these available funds to compensate a county are state funds, so the sourcing part doesn't matter, and it doesn't have boundaries. We don't have to ask the question with this model how much taxable sales were raised in County X versus County Y, because we're talking about how many taxable sales were raised as a result of the project. Okay, of course, there's no way then that somebody could end up on the short end of the stick because of the county impacts or sales tax impacts being imbalanced with respect to where the siting impacts are.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that the bill number one, HB 152, do pass. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. House Bill 152 passes the House. The next bill for our consideration is Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I have privilege of the floor? We have that second class, and it's Miss McKee. She's substituting today for Miss Decker's fifth grade class at Henderson Elementary, and I'm sure they're really excited to hear the dissertation on economics of industrial siting. Welcome to the House.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 225. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 225 from Representative Berger, an act relating to law enforcement, amending duties of the State Highway Patrol and providing security for state officials and buildings as specified, assigning duties for security during the Capitol Building renovation and restoration project, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 225, Highway Patrol Security Duties, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Vice Chairman Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 225 do pass. And I further move House Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 225. And I would like to defer the explanation of the bill and the amendment to our good Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Edwards. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to discuss first the first reading amendment to House Bill 225. And what that does is, if you were to look at your bill on page 3, is to change the funding source. For most of you by now, you should know that we are about to start on the renovation of our state capitol and our state building, the Hirschler. We will, upon finishing our session, start the move to various buildings within our capital city. And with that, we will be needing security when we are in those buildings for our governor, for our electeds, and for us when we are in session or in interim committee meetings. We have the funding, and by the wisdom of our good appropriations committee, in the general fund to be appropriated. And we've changed that to come out of the capital renovation account, which I believe is appropriate. And if there were to be unexpended funds, they would revert back to the general fund on or before July 1st, 2016. And the reason for that, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, we continue to have discussions about our renovation project, and it is a work in progress that we have many things yet to define with our building structures, and one of them is our security. Right now, we take for granted because we have the security force within the Capitol. And it's all within one building. We have our electeds and, of course, us, and we just take it for granted, really. When we move to the different facilities, for example, when we move to our legislative facility, we'll be all on one floor. And that's a new challenge for us because we'll have many more exits, one level, and that will possibly create the need for extra security. And with that, we'll have to look at possibly hiring contract service. So our highway department, our troopers have been looking for folks with good experience and the possibility of hiring temporary workforce. And then, as we move forward through the interim and further design our needs for when we return, somewhere between 2 and 3 years, we will have a plan as to what will security look like for the Capitol renovated and the new Hirschler with its new addition and with its executives in the fourth component of the Hirschler building and what is remaining to house our electeds and our legislature. So at that point, we will have a security plan, and we'll have to look at what will that cost. And so that's the amendment, and I would ask for a favorable eye on that.
The question being called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Amendment, Standing Committee Amendment number one has passed.
And, Mr. Chairman, really in explaining the amendment, that takes care of the bill, too, so I would call for the question.
Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Moniz's motion that the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that Bill number 225 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those in opposed say no. House Bill 225 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 183. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 183 from Representative Petroff, an act relating to insurance requiring coverage of early refills of prescription eye drops under health insurance policies as specified, providing for applicability and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 183, Insurance Coverage, Early Refills of Prescription Eye Drops, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasparik, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 183 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I will turn the explanation of both over to Chairman Petroff.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to dispense with the amendment, we actually brought the first part of the amendment to the committee. When I originally had the bill drafted, we didn't have full agreement over the exact numbers with the insurance companies, but they finally agreed on these numbers. So we asked for that change to be made. And then the second half of the amendment was just to reflect that people other than optometrists and physicians are able to prescribe these drops. So if there's no question on the amendment, I'll call for the question on the amendment.
The question has been called. All those in favor of House Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 is passed. Ms. Petroff. Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this bill is brought to create a consistent policy for early refills of prescription eye drops. What the bill does not do, it does not require coverage where there's not currently coverage, so this only applies to policies that currently cover prescription eye drops. The refills remain subject to the same copays and the same coinsurance. It doesn't extend the number of refills designated in the original prescription. We just have different policies over different companies, and this creates consistency, which is going to make it easier for the prescriber not to have to juggle prescriptions to meet different policies. So the bill creates a standard, basically, where kids can have one bottle at home and one bottle at school. And it also allows for early refills, which are often needed because a lot of the droppers don't have standard titration, and people can waste drops if they don't see very well or maybe have a coordination issue. I think we've all experienced missing our eyes with eye drops. We want these people taking the eye drops so their conditions don't worsen. The insurance companies want them taking their eye drops. The insurance companies currently have these policies. They're just very different policies. And so what we're trying to do is standardize those policies at basically a 75%. And none of the insurance companies were against making this consistent across the board. So with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number HB 183 do pass. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 183 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 147. Would the reading clerk, 47. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 47 from Representative Hunt, an act relating to alcoholic beverages, increasing the limitation on shipment of wine to households and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 47, Shipment of Wine, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Allen, Blake, Campbell, Eklund, Hunt, Larson, Lindholm, two no votes, Representative McKim and Yeagy, and is signed by Representative McKim, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman McKim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole arises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 47 do pass. And I'll turn the explanation over to our resident wine expert, Majority Whip.
Majority Whip, Representative Hunt, would you?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't expect to hear too much whining about this bill, but I do proudly bring you House Bill 47. The intent of this bill, as was heard in committee, is if you'll turn to on page 2, starting at line 4, 3 and 4, is that we are raising the amount of wine that can be shipped to any one individual household from 18 liters to 36 liters. So we're doubling that. Essentially, that is going from 2 cases to 4 cases. And this was brought about, this issue was brought to my attention actually by a constituent who happened to be a friend of mine, who he and his wife had received as a wedding gift a sign-up thing for a Wine of the Month Club. And then when they went to sign up for it, they were told that particular club did not ship to Wyoming because they were not allowed to, because they sent more than what was legally allowed. And so this just tries to, aims to address that. And some of the things that we did here in committee, there is indeed a 12% tax associated with product through markups and sales tax. And that totals up in 2014 was about $456,000 in total revenue. These wines, for the most part, are not available in liquor stores in this state. These are sampler products from vineyards in other states on the West Coast, or really from wherever. And so there's not too much issue with there being additional competition to our retail liquor stores in the state. So that's kind of an overview of the bill, and I would stand for any questions.
Representative Howerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I need to be caught up a little bit here. Why is there a limit at all?
Representative
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that, Representative from District 22. The main reason is that there was, as we heard a history on this from one of the people who spoke on it, in the early 90s there was a movement to try and lift all caps on all alcohol, not just wine, but distilled spirits and beer as well. And the reason for that cap is just sort of a control on immature behavior, basically. The concern at the time was that if you lifted the cap on whiskey altogether, that frat houses at the university over across the hill would literally be ordering this stuff by the truckload. And so, which, yeah, I mean, exactly. was of some concern to law enforcement, and also there was the concern that went along with that of making it far too accessible to underage drinkers. If you could have unlimited alcohol being shipped to your home, it would make it a lot more easy for kids to get their hands onto it. So that's the main reason. When I initially brought this bill last year, it started out with lifting this cap altogether, and this was simply a compromise with certain people to simply double it for now, and you know, personally, I'd be in favor of raising it even higher down the road.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need to explain why I voted no on the committee on this. This particular bill has some little problems with it. The one that we talked about in committee was the fact that it's for any household, which means that a person can have that amount shipped to every one of his neighbor's households also. There's no limitation on that. So you pick all your neighbors, and you can have 36 liters sent to one house, 36 to the next house, 36 to the next house. All your neighbors can do this. So what we're considered with, what we were really concerned with at this time, of course, was the fact that we didn't want to see this creating competition against our distributors that we have within the state of Wyoming. And if this goes through and this happens, we're afraid that some type of a black market might come about. There will be competition. We will lose money. They will lose money besides.
Speaker. Mr. Chairman, that wouldn't happen in my neighborhood. If I have it shipped to my neighbors, they won't give it back. Representative Barlow.
Thank you. In favor of the bill, and actually this is going to cut down on, this will cut down the number of households that are shipped to in my neighborhood. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called, all those in favor of Representative McKim's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that the bill number 47 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 47 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 228. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 228 from Representative Greer. An act relating to real property, providing an exception to requirements for subdividing real property for family members when the real property is held in a trust controlled by the grantor as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom we referred House Bill 228, Subdivision-Family Exception, respectfully report same back to the House, with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Danswanitzer. One excuse, Representative Byrd, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the committee of the whole rise to report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 228 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn over the floor management of the bill to the good representative that has statistically the least windy district in all of Wyoming, Representative Greer.
Representative Greer.
Huh. Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief as this is a much drier subject than the last. Already been a long day. I think, as most of us know, in the state of Wyoming, we've got subdivision laws. That is if you're going to divide off a parcel of land under 35 acres, we've got all the provisions in place that require that to be platted and go through a process that is somewhat uniform but varies a bit by county by county. Within the subdivision, we have existing an exemption, and it's the family exemption. And the reason why that's there is that if a father and mother want to give a parcel of their land to their son or daughter so he or she may build a house that they're able to. And the statute as it exists has some requirements. That mom and dad own that land for 5 years before it can be divided and given over to their son or daughter. And then that the son and daughter have to live there in that home or on that land for 1 year. And that's just an exemption. It's very helpful in agricultural situations where the son or daughter comes back home to help run the farm or ranch. They understandably want to live in their own house, not in the bunkhouse, or live with mom and dad, and so they'll build that. So that's already in statute. Same things applies with grandmas and grandpas and grandsons and granddaughters as well, but anyway, I'll move on. One of the problems we run into, this is a real problem, not one looking for a solution, is that it has been interpreted and is being enforced that if mom and dad were wise enough to do some estate planning so that they can pass their farm or ranch on down to their children, that they will move their land from their own names, from John and Sally to John and Sally's revocable trust, which in our statutes is deemed a grantor trust. That is a trust where the person owns the trust, created the trust, controls the trust, and is the beneficiary of the trust. All incidences of ownership. As a matter of fact, it is such a look-through entity that the IRS considers it a disregarded entity. And so we'll run into these situations where mom and dad decided to do their estate planning, took their real estate, put it in their trust, like they should, and then a year later want to give it to Junior so that he can come back and run the farm, and they don't qualify for this exemption. This bill simply says that if the land in there is in the name of the grantor or in a trust owned by the grantor for a combined period of time of 5 years, that they still qualify for this exemption, the absolute intent of this exemption. So that's the first part. The second part, and this goes to the reason why you need to support the first part. It's in the second part we did an exemption saying that, you know what, sometimes mom and dad went and talked to their CPA and decided that it was best that they had their operations in a corporation, still owned by mom and dad, but that they wanted to be able to have mom and dad bring Junior back, let him become part of the corporation, run the farm or ranch. And so in Section E, the exemption says where the landowner is a corporation and 80% owned by mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, that they would still qualify. Well, it was, I'm going to say we go back about 50 years. Corporations were a great vehicle, especially for farmers for tax purposes. And then, I'm going to get this date wrong, I think it was 86, tax laws changed and it wasn't so beneficial. And so what we found is that a lot of folks started using limited liability companies, limited partnerships. And so while I was cleaning this up for trust, I thought, you know what, I'm going to make it clear that we're not just talking about corporations, but all business entities that might still be owned 80%. So I do think this is very important with the way this exemption is being interpreted. This cleanup is truly a cleanup. Will get us to the intent and allow this exemption to work as previous bodies here had wanted it to. So I'd ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Zwanicher's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 228 do pass, please say aye. All those opposed, no. House Bill 228 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 214. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 214 from Representative Brown, an act relating to the practice of law, amending, updating, and repealing provisions related to the practice of law as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 214, Practice of Law Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 214 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I'll just let the Speaker explain both the bill and the amendment. So, Speaker Brown.
Speaker Brown. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill, House Bill 214, comes about basically for two reasons. Number one, in 1939, the Wyoming State Bar assumed a much greater role with the licensing and regulation of attorneys as an administrative arm of the Supreme Court. Previous to that, it was done by the legislature. And since that time, the Supreme Court has become more and more involved and today makes the rules and manages the bar, and the Wyoming Bar Association is an administrative agency for the Supreme Court. The second thing that's happened is that our Supreme Court, in their role as supervisors of the bar, have taken us from our own state bar exam to a uniform bar exam. And that's a change that was adopted by the Supreme Court that many of us think was for the better. And so today we take a uniform bar exam, which is similar. I can't remember how many states are involved now. I think it might be 28, and the number of states is growing all the time. By using a uniform bar exam, we accomplish a couple of things. We think we have a more professional testing atmosphere than we had before, despite the best efforts of our members. This provides us a better opportunity. And the second thing it does is enhance what's called reciprocity, which is the ability of attorneys in this state to be admitted in other states on the same basis that attorneys in other states might be admitted in this state. And reciprocity has become important because it's more and more important to be able to practice law across state lines in order to adequately represent clients. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll briefly go through the changes. The first change is on page 2, lines 6 and 7, and again in line 10. And that change recognizes that the executive director of the bar serves as executive secretary of the Board of Law Examiners, and attorneys that are admitted must take the uniform bar exam, so we don't really need these provisions anymore, and they're antiquated with respect to the way that the bar exam is administered today. The second change is in 33.5105, which deals with the omissions. It starts on page 2 at line 17 and goes all the way through page 3. The Wyoming Supreme Court struck down as unconstitutional the requirement that attorneys be U.S. citizens. That was done in 1979. But that remains on the books. The law office study rule has rarely been used. There's only one lawyer in the state of Wyoming practicing whoever took advantage of that, and it's highly unlikely that it could even be done today. So that's the reason for striking that language. Then we move to 33.5108, so I'm on page 3 at line 15. In 2012, the Wyoming Supreme Court elected to go to the Uniform Bar Examination, which is a scientifically developed and graded examination that's prepared by a national conference. It's given twice a year and graded by the Board of Law Examiners, and those members of the Board of Law Examiners receive training in how to grade that exam, and the court recently adopted significant revisions to the rules and procedure governing admission to the practice of law as a result of that transition, and these changes are in conformance with that. The next changes are in 33.5109, the omission, so I'm on page 3 now at line 15 and beyond.
The Supreme Court's recent amendments to the rules and procedures governing admission to the practice of law include extensive provisions for special accommodations for individuals with disabilities. And so these are basically ADA provisions. That's the motivation for the change there. Then we go to 33.5. Well, I might have told you wrong. 33.5.109, which is the ADA stuff, is on the top of page 4. Then we go to 33.5.110, which starts on page 4, line 17. The Supreme Court's rules provide that members of bars from other states who meet certain practice requirements may be admitted without taking the uniform bar exam, so long as we do the same thing, and that's called reciprocity, and we're trying to establish reciprocity with other states. It has an interesting history. At one time, those bar exams were perceived as being fence-out tools to keep other attorneys from practicing in our state, but we probably hurt ourselves more than we helped ourselves, and so we have moved the other way, as I think most states have, as they've become more reflective about this and said reciprocity is a good thing because it gives our attorneys in the state an opportunity to be able to practice in other states, and attorneys in other states were finding ways to practice here anyway. Then we go to 33.5.111 on page 5, and that concerns practicing pro hac vice. The Supreme Court's rules contain specific provisions that enable a foreign attorney to practice here for a particular case, pro hac vice. And those rules require that that attorney associate with the Wyoming Council and fulfill certain fitness requirements under the rule. And so these statutory provisions are no longer needed. The Supreme Court rules are handling that. Then we go to 33.5.112. So now I'm on page 5 at line 21. That change is proposed so that the oath can be given without attorneys from another state being admitted to Wyoming having to travel here to take the oath. And the change, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 inserts some language on page 9 near the end of it where after the word by, we insert a judge or justice of A so that it reads the oath may be administered in another state or territory of the United States by a judge or justice of a court of general jurisdiction. We felt that was a clean, rather than saying the oath would be administered by a court, because I don't think an inanimate object can administer an oath. So that's the explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment. Then, 33.5.116, which starts at line 19 on page 6. The annual license fees have long been set by the Board of Officers and Commissioners of the Bar, which are the elected leadership of the Bar, with approval by the Wyoming Supreme Court, and this just conforms the statute to that practice. Then 33.5.114 is antiquated, and so you can see at line 11 on page 7 that is repealed. Misconduct of attorneys is now handled in a different way, and it's governed by the Supreme Court. Some of them are pretty interesting reading if you've been watching a couple that have come down lately. They're really quite interesting. And the same with 35.5.115. That was also antiquated and has been deleted. So that's the explanation of the bill. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman, I would call for the question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to the bill.
You have heard the motion of the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question being called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please vote aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We're back to the bill.
And, Mr. Chairman, I stand for questions, and if there are no questions, I call for the question on the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 214 do pass. All those in favor of the bill, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. House Bill 214 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 138. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Bill 138 from Representative Northrup. An act relating to workers' compensation, including special education teachers in the extra hazardous occupations category, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 2 Appropriations, to whom is referred House Bill 138, Workers' Compensation for Special Education Teachers, respectfully reports saying back to the House for the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harvey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 138 do pass. And I turn the explanation of the bill over to Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring before you House Bill 138. If you look in your inbox, you just received an amendment because upon going through this, found out we accidentally cut out the aides. Let me explain this to you. Also in your inbox is a handout that has all the explanation of the, like, 300-156. On the back side, it says relevant positions. It's 34 CFR 300. It's all definitions of the highly qualified personnel that are listed within this. It just kind of gives you a cheat sheet so that you don't wonder when you look at the second page of it who 34 CFR 300-18 is. Let me begin with a little background. We have within our district some, as you do within your school districts, special ed teachers, and we have a special ed teacher who is gesturing with her thumbs one day, as she always did, in fact, and the student across from her saw those thumbs wiggling and moving all the time, and he reached over and grabbed one of the thumbs and yanked it out and stripped the thumb out of the joint and pulled all the tendons. So she took her leave time, she took her personal time, she took sick days, she took everything to go get her thumb put back together. The insurance, of course, paid for it, but she lost all her time out of the district. She came back and, out of habit, was talking with the same student, had the thumb that was bandaged up. Of course, it's bandaged up and it's down. And he saw the other thumb wiggling, and he just reached over and did the same thing to the other thumb. Now she's out of the district without any leave time. She's losing all her time, and she still has to pay for her portion of it. And so that's what prompted this, to bringing the special ed teachers into this extra hazardous duty. So we're bringing them into special ed teachers into the extra hazardous occupational category. This act applies to government entities engaged in the industrial classifications listed under subsection A of this section and to employees of governmental entities engaged in or employed as following. Page 2. Page 2 is where I slipped the amendment into, so that it now reads, well, and the important part of it is that on line 8 through 10, and certified special education teachers as defined by who provide services to eligible students with behavioral, emotional, cognitive learning, physical or health disabilities that require all educational services to be provided outside of the regular classroom because of the use of supplementary aids and services cannot be achieved satisfactorily in the regular classroom. These are the special ed students that we're talking about. It's a very small class. It's 96 and a quarter FTEs when you look at the chart from the Wyoming, the people who work with education across the street. And it's a very small group. These people work inside enclosed classrooms. They're a classroom that has a bathroom within it. Some of these students are severely handicapped. They're in a wheelchair. They need to be able to keep them cleaned up. And so we're just bringing this to this exact specific group of special ed teachers and including all of the aides. The aides were always included. They've been included ever since way back when. I stand for questions. And also would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 138. Stand for questions.
The question being called, all those in... Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of questions. I noticed that there is no fiscal note due to a lack of time. I was wondering if we can expect one in future readings. And I've gotten some emails on this subject. Why is it that the paraprofessionals are covered and not the teachers themselves? Thank you.
Representative Northrup.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The paras have always been covered, and the teachers were not, just because of it, whether it's written in the law or whatever it is, but the paras were always covered. The paras are the aides. And as far as the fiscal note goes, I asked the Workforce Services to prepare that. It was $164,000 and some change. I have it on my desk. I'll be glad to get it out. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the amendment? Question being called, all those in favor of the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. The question being called, all those in favor of Representative Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 138 do pass. Please say aye. All those opposed, no. House Bill 138 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Schwartz. I move that the Committee of the Whole begs leave to rise and sit again until 1 p.m. And lunch is ready.
Call for the committee announcements.
Thank you. And then you got that for reconsideration. Oh, you got him all problem. If you can read, you're going to be okay.
That's what I'm hoping for.
You're doing fine.
I don't have a committee announcement, but I have an announcement. Chairman Zalanister.
Thank you, Chairman Edwards. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet twice tomorrow. First, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in H-18, we'll hear the following three bills. House Bill 227, Cannabidiol Medication. House Bill 235, Foreign Business Entities. And House Bill 232, Open Meetings. Then over the lunch hour upon noon recess, we'll hear House Bill 171, Architect In-State Residency Definitions.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to hear House Bill 174, Nicotine Products Regulation, House Bill 187, Marijuana Impact Study, and House Bill 220, Wyoming Coal Specialty License Plates. And then again at noon, upon noon recess, we will hear House Bill 163, Critical Access Hospital Endowment Challenge Program.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting Friday morning at 8 a.m. in room H10 to hear House Bill 208, Hard-to-Draw Hunting Licenses, and House Bill 175, Determination of Lottery Proceeds.
Chairwoman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet today, 10 minutes after adjournment, in room H17, where we will hear House Bill 216, Veterans Skilled Nursing Center, House Bill 240, Physician Assistant School, and if time permits, House Bill 246, Acupuncture Practice Act.
Chairman Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet immediately after adjournment today to consider House Bill number 11, Distance Education Task Force Report, and House Bill 204, Campus Security Study. On Friday, your committee will undertake and consider House Bill number 231, Hathaway Scholarship Exceptions, and House Bill number 196, Civics Proficiency Examination.
Chairman McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 5, Agriculture, will meet tomorrow morning, Thursday, at 7 a.m. in room 302 to consider the following bills: House Bill 203, Livestock Brands Reciprocity; House Bill 165, Access to Public Lands; and also a reminder, we will have the FFA students there to debate and show you what the debate is going on in their competitions, and everyone's invited to attend that. It will usually probably occur about 8 o'clock or shortly thereafter.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick reminder to the majority members that we will be caucusing immediately upon noon recess in B-63.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Having voted on the prevailing side of House Bill 137, I am giving notice of my intent to ask for reconsideration of the third reading vote tomorrow at the end of third reading.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The minority caucus will be meeting 5 minutes on adjourn, 5 minutes on recess in the basement of this building, East Conference Room. The meeting is open to the public.
Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your Judiciary Committee will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 to consider House Bills 158, which is a carryover, House Bill 195, which is a carryover from today, and House Bill 243. Furthermore, the Judiciary Committee will meet tomorrow at noon recess to consider House Bill 222 and House Bill 230.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow night, 10 minutes after adjournment, to hear two bills, House Bill 241, Electronic Driver's License, and House Bill 223, YDOT General Fund Budget Request.
Chairman Kirkbride.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor. Just a reminder that tomorrow morning the legislative prayer breakfast will be held at 6:30 at the Egg and I. The speaker this week will be Dr. Richard Berry from Cheyenne Youth Alternatives Office. We invite you to attend. Thank you.
The Committee of the Whole will rise and sit again at 1 p.m.